Welcome to Get Over It, the Intuitive Transformation Podcast for Exceptional 21st Century Living. We've got a very interesting show tonight. We've got three folks with us. We've got Matthew Fox, Skylar Wolfman, and Jennifer Listug. And they are the co-authors of the book, Order of the Sacred Earth, an integrational vision of love and action. And folks, this is going to open your eyes to a new way of looking at the earth in our lives, or if you're already on that path, an even deeper way. So this is a very exciting show, chock full of information. So, you know, take a good listen, go out and get the book if you want more information, because it's excellent. You will really enjoy it. Now, the information shared on Get Over It uses intuitive and pragmatic insight to help you break through the blocks and release energy that is no longer needed. Yes, we're going to help you release your BS that is holding you back. But the real question is, are you truly ready to? And by the way, folks, BS is belief system. Now, a bit about me for my new listeners, intuitive since birth. I'm a third generation intuitive with over 3 decades of experience helping people break through the blocks along their path. I'm a strategist for personal and professional transformation, revealing information which enables you to become a master builder of your life. I spent 25 successful years in corporate America as an executive sales professional, and I am the founder of Healing Visions Ministries and the Northern California Children's Education Network, a 501c3 nonprofit. I authored Getting Your M&Ms, the Men and Money book, and Masterful Choices, the Key to Easy, Effective Change. I provide consultations and healings regarding relationships, business, career, money, and love that heal the mind-body-spirit connection, allowing you to live your life to the absolute fullest. Now, my clients tell me that I keep it real while providing them with accurate information to assist them along their journey as a spirit living a human existence. But they also say, if you really don't want to know, don't ask Monique. My background includes a doctorate in metaphysics, Reiki master teacher, ordained minister, and clinical hypnotherapist, so whether you are stressed, depressed, or possessed, I can help. Find out more about me and the services I offer by visiting my website, and that's MoniqueChapman.com. And you can also sign up from my newsletter, Intuitive Living, from that same website, and that is MoniqueChapman.com. In the midst of global fire, earthquake, and flood, as species are going extinct every day and national and global economies totter, the planet doesn't need another church, nor does it need another religion. What it needs is a new order, a sacred community and movement. Now, my guest tonight is Matthew Fox, and he is a 76-year-old elder, activist, and spiritual theologian, and the author of 34 books on spirituality and culture. He has taught at Stanford and is the founder of the University of Creation Spirituality. We also have Skylar Wilson, who is a 33-year-old wilderness and meditation guide who founded Wild Awakenings and teaches intercultural ceremonies. And last but certainly not least, we have Jennifer Listug, and she is a 28-year-old writer, spiritual leader and publicist, and she is the co-director of Wild Awakenings. And for information, you can check them out at their website, and that is orderofthesacredearth.com. .org. Again, that's orderofthesacredearth.org. And again, tonight we're going to be talking about the information in their book, The Order of the Sacred Earth, an Intergenerational Vision of Love and Action. Welcome, y'all.
Thank you.
Great to be here.
Good to be here.
Hey, it's so good to have you here. So not in any particular order, but the one thing I want to say before we get started, I love the diversity of age. We have the elder, we have the young folks, and everybody's coming together because the elders know what we've gone through, and they're like, uh-oh, we're on the wrong path. And the young people, they want a vibrant life, you know, and they want Earth to survive and live. So thank you very much for coming together.
Our pleasure.
You're welcome. So, Matthew, how did this process begin?
Pardon me?
How did this process begin of you guys meeting and coming together and creating this wonderful body of work?
Well, I knew Skylar because I hired him to be director of our Cosmic Masses, which are an alternative form of worship, which involve rave and dance and DJing and VJing and so forth. And it's a way to bring new life into a postmodern version of worship and prayer and mm-hmm. ritual. So that's how I knew Skylar. But the order itself, for me, started with a dream I had a few years ago that woke me up at 4 in the morning, and it said, do it, with in capital letters and exclamation points. And the it was to start an order that was based on the sacredness of the earth, and that was not restricted to any one religion. So that made it different from a religious order. That's why we call it a spiritual order. So Buddhists are invited, and Jews and Christians and Muslims and whoever, and also Sufis, and of course atheists as well, because of the one vow that we take is that I pledge to be the best lover of Earth that I can be and the best defender of Earth that I can be. So that's what brings us together. And the fact that it welcomes diversity in terms of traditions is very valuable, I think, at this time, because each tradition has its own charism, its own energy and beauty. But we can all get together around the issue of the suffering of Mother Earth and, in fact, the destruction and peril that Mother Earth, that climate change, is facing us with. So that's the origin from my point of view. Now, Skylar, when I shared my dream to Skylar, it turns out he had his own dream, so I'm sure he's happy to talk about that.
Okay, Skylar?
Yeah, I had a dream probably, might have been the same night, but it was at least the same week as Matthew had his dream, and it was about training. It was a group of people training with our breath, and we were training it to move energy through our bodies and to clear things and to actually levitate in the dream. And the dream ends with five people levitating above San Francisco at sunrise. And it was just, I woke up and I felt like really alive, connected. And so when Matthew called me up and told me about his dream, I was like, wow, I could just really feel that something was afoot. And I felt that, you know, the Standing Rock protests were happening, for the Dakota Access Pipeline. And I just felt like there's an underground movement that's happening. It looks on the news like things are just falling apart, but I can really feel, not only through the dream, but in general, that there's an awakening happening, and that's what the book is really about.
Okay, and Skylar, your thoughts? I'm sorry, Jennifer, your thoughts?
Yeah, so Matthew and Skylar both write about the dreams that they had in the book, and I didn't write about a dream, and it took me until more recently to realize that I also had a dream early on about the order, but mine was a waking dream, a living dream. When I was in my early 20s, I was very involved in a spiritual community where I was living in Marin County, and I ended up starting a young adult group there. And this group would meet once a week to have a discussion about some topic in spirituality philosophy, and we'd also get together once a month to do volunteer projects. And what ended up happening was I stopped attracting people who were already involved in the spiritual community. The people who liked to go to the Sunday morning worship service and do that thing were just doing that, and they weren't interested in connecting in another way. But a lot of people started joining the group. I think I had 25 people at one point who didn't have a spiritual community, who didn't have a church, a lot of people who considered themselves agnostic or atheist, and this is people between the ages of 18 and 35, and they were looking for a more meaningful way to connect with their peers and a supportive system where they could come together with other people and serve their communities, and that's what we offered in this young adult group. It was small, but it was really deep, and it was life-changing for some of the people who joined it. And so I realized now that I was envisioning during that time and in creating this group a new way of connecting with people to explore their spirituality and to be of service to their communities that didn't have anything to do with church or the building mm-hmm. that we were in or the minister or the leader or the dogma or the lineage. And that was so when I heard about Matthew and Skylar's dreams, something in me went, aha, they're naming what I've been trying to do too. And that's what the order has been for me.
Okay. Well, it's very interesting that two of you received the information in a sleeping dream when you went to different dimensions and you gathered information and you brought it back, and one did it mm-hmm. in the awakened state, but it's all leading everyone to the same place. Now, do you folks mm-hmm. differentiate spirituality from religion? Anybody can answer. Don't be shy.
Oh, I see.
Very much so.
Spirituality as the essence of religion, the distilled version of religion, because it is about waking up, and it is about living a deep life and not a superficial life. And religions, of course, can go stale. It can just become memorized ritual or memorized rote or dogma or doctrine. And obviously, what's really at stake in its depth is a stirring of the human heart and the cleansing of the human heart and the awakening to the wonder and awe of our existence here on Earth, and therefore the gratitude. That gratitude is really the essence of healthy religion. And then also, of course, the experience of what the mystics call the via negativa, which is silence and stillness, but also the realization that suffering has a lot to teach us too. And so being able to deal with the suffering of the earth and of one another and oneself, that's a deep part of spirituality too. And then out of that also comes creativity and being able to tap into the powers of creativity that are obviously what make the universe work. This is a big part of spirituality too. And finally, the work of justice, because we can be creative about bad things, you know, creating gas ovens or something to destroy people. So we have to steer our creativity by way of justice and compassion. And that would be, the fourth dimension to healthy spirituality and a healthy religion, is the work we do for healing, for celebrating, for transformation in terms of justice and compassion. So that's how I outline what real spirituality is about. It's about being a mystic, which is a lover, and about being a prophet or warrior who is defending what one cherishes.
Okay, mm-hmm. So since religion and Skylar, you take this one. Since, you know, religion to me is very controlling. Okay, if they got their mm-hmm. dogma, their rules, the regs, you can't, you can, you know, whatever, even down to whether or not you can have sex. So how does that fit into the creative and, I don't know, I think spirituality is something that's from the heart and going out and embracing everything. So how does that fit in?
Well, I see it as a very different approach. I agree with the Dalai Lama in saying that it's pretty clear that the religion hasn't worked and isn't working in transforming humanity and our world into one that works for all beings and creates a life of love and connection. And although that's the case, there's a lot going on in humanity that isn't connected, but our truth, and I think the truth of all religion and spirituality, is that we are profoundly connected to everything else. It's mm-hmm. On every level. And so for me, the main difference is that spirituality is coming from within, and religion and institutions and dogma and rules are all coming from the outside. It's saying, well, we want to create this for humanity, so we're going to prod it and move people and energy and money in these directions. And the mystic is somebody who's comfortable with mystery, somebody who's comfortable with saying, I'm not going to control it. I'm just going to see what happens. I'm going to live life the way that I'm feeling called to do so. But it comes from a profound trust, having experiences of connection with life, where I realize that I don't really have any control over how any of this goes, but it's a good thing, because the way it's happening is way more intelligent, way more filled with beauty and depth than my conscious mind can create on its own, or any of us can create. So I think humans at our best are connected to something larger and deeper than humanity, and at the same time, we're doing something unique as humans. So we're adding another dimension to the universe, and so yeah, all of that is just to say that I think spirituality is quite a different activity than religion.
Yeah, I agree mm-hmm. with you. I just don't get the religious thing. But anyway, it just never mm-hmm. made sense to me as a child. Jennifer, mm-hmm. explain to us, what is the order and why is it needed now? Why is it critical now?
Mm-hmm. Well, Matthew could probably tell you more about the history of orders in various religions, but the main thing that I've learned from him is that orders move much more quickly and fluidly than new religions. And for all the reasons we've just talked about, we don't need a new religion, and yet we know that the religions that we have right now aren't working, and they're not feeding people. And we also know that people need to be fed. They need to be fed spiritually. They need to have a way to come together in ritual, in community. They mm-hmm. need a context for the good that they want to do in the world. And so an order is flexible, and it's open, and it's self-organizing. We're not creating a set of rules and a structure that we're then writing up some manual and disseminating it and asking people to you know, become one of us. We're asking everyone who's interested in this, what is your vision? What can you contribute to this movement and this new community?
Mm-hmm.
And then there's also the other meaning of the word order as opposed to chaos. We envision bringing order to, as Skylar has said, the many amazing emergent movements, both spiritual and activists that are happening now. We feel like if we can come together and bring some context and some co-creativity to all the movements that are happening, it's going to give all of them more power.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, folks, we're speaking with Matthew Fox, Skylar Wilson, and Jennifer Listug, and they co-authored Order of the Sacred Earth, an Intergenerational Vision of Love and Action. You can find it on Amazon. You can go to their website at the Order of the sacredearth.org. Again, that's the Order of the sacredearth.org, and find it there. Now, I think Matthew, I'll talk to you about this particular question. We talked about the order, and I guess the vision happens before the order, and maybe that was the dream that you had, but then there's also the vow. So could you talk to us about those three different concepts melded together?
Well, Jen alluded to the fact that you find orders in the East as well as the West. And so the Hindus have orders, the Buddhists have orders, the Sufis have orders, and of course in Christianity there are orders. I myself was a member of the Dominican Order for 34 years. Then I got abooted by the Vatican because I was supporting women's rights and gay rights and a few other naughty things. Mm-hmm. But liberation theology. But this is how I understand what's going on. That clearly, and of course, speaking to Jennifer and Skylar, you just got testimonies that as young people, they do not see religion today as particularly healthy.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the point. That there have been many times in history that religion ran out of fuel and was going downhill. So in the Christian tradition, the third century, the empire and the church were beginning to buddy up. And so a lot of young people, and it was young people, revolted by going out into the desert. And we now know these people as the desert fathers and the desert mothers. But these were young people first who just went out and they couldn't reconcile the values of the empire with the values that Jesus was teaching, so they went out to the desert to do their own thing. And then in the 5th and 6th century, you had the Benedictine invention of the monastic system, the St. Benedictine Sister Scholastica. So they started that system in the 5th, 6th century, and of course that held things together for many, many hundreds of years. But then that went bad in the 12th century, and then you had Francis of Assisi and Dominic starting a new kind of order in the early 13th century as kind of a revolt against the corruption of the religious orders in the monastic system. Then in the 16th century, you had corruption again, of course, in Rome, in the Vatican, and you had the Protestant Reformations. And I think you can understand all the Protestant movements, denominations, as being really lay orders, because they were, each one has its own dimension and its own way of looking at Christianity and ritual and the rest. And also in the late 16th century, you had Ignatius start the Jesuit order, which also was a response to the corruption in Rome. So now we're in the 21st century, and I'm looking around and seeing what's happening, and all I see is people, especially young people, but not exclusively young people, leaving church and leaving organized religion, but I don't see a lot positive happening. And that's where I think this dream really hit me, that the idea of taking a vow together, I mean, I think that Gandhi took lots of vows in his life. And, you know, people take marriage vows, but there are other vows people can take. And why not a vow to protect Mother Earth? And because that's what's really staring us all in the face today, no matter what tradition we belong to. Mm-hmm. So we had our first vow ceremony on the solstice, December 21st last year, in the Berkeley Buddhist Center there. 80 people showed up, and there were indigenous people, there were Jewish people, Christians, Sufi, a goddess people, and there was at least one atheist. They all showed up to take the vows. And there are many other places now around the country where groups, as Jen said, it's a self-organizing organization. So there's a group in Ashland, North Carolina. Mm-hmm. That have a strong group going. There's a group in Boulder. There's a group in Florida, in Illinois, and Southern California. There are a couple of groups. So we're inviting people to create their own pods, their own groups, and to organize, as Jen said, in a self-organizing way, but to keep in touch about how they're interpreting this opportunity to create a movement that recovers a sense of the sacredness of the earth and is willing to work for it and make a difference.
Okay. Jennifer
and Monique,
go ahead.
I was going to say, I'd love to speak about the vow too, if that's okay.
Yeah, I was going to ask you. So go ahead. We're intuitively
Great.
Synced.
Perfect. I must have been reading your mind. Well, I wanted to share that I start my essay, and I guess I should say also that the first half of the book are essays by Matthew and Skylar and myself, and the second half, we've got another dozen or so essays by all kinds of amazing leaders and teachers who have wonderful things to share about the order. And I start my essay with a quote from W.H. Murray, who was a Scottish mountaineer in the 19th century. And it's a quote that is familiar to a lot of people, though I think it's usually misattributed to Goethe. But this is what he says. He says, "Until one is committed, there is hesitancy, the chance to draw back, always ineffectiveness. Concerning all acts of initiative and creation, there is one elementary truth, the ignorance of which kills countless ideas and splendid plans." And this is the truth, that the moment one definitely commits oneself, then providence moves too. So there is the practical reason for the vow, the commitment that all orders and all religions have. But then for me, the deeper and sort of spiritual purpose of the vow is, like W.H. Murray is saying here, once you commit your life to something, taking a vow in a ritual way where you're seen and mirrored and held, your life changes dramatically in ways that you can't plan for. You open yourself up to, you know, the universe's energy, God's energy, cosmic energy, and all kinds of gifts and guides and helpers come into your life and help you stay committed. And then I was thinking about that this morning. Then for me, kind of in my day-to-day life, the practical value for the vow that I took the vow last December when we had our first ritual, is it's just that sort of the cheerleader in my life when it gets hard. I know that this is a really old reference now, but you think about the movie The Inconvenient Truth and what that means, how inconvenient it is to be a lover and defender of the earth in a society that really encourages us to just exploit the earth without even thinking about it.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, the vow is my motivation to take the extra 30 steps to go outside and compost my food scraps instead of throwing them in the garbage that's right at my fingertips, and to make the extra effort to look for the carpool so we can share our vehicle and the fuel we're using. And it does take effort and it's hard, but in those moments when I have a split second to decide, I remember this vow that I took, and it actually makes it easy.
Okay.
So thanks for letting me share about that.
Oh, yeah, no problem. Skylar, you know, based on what Jennifer has just said, how do you reach, or do we reach people like the current person who sits in the White House and other leaders across the world who think that all of this is just BS, and I mean bullshit with this one. So how do we awaken those people, because they basically are pulling the strings right now as to what happens. So how do we reach them?
Well, I'd be lying if I said that I knew, but I do believe that there's this quote that kind of guides me by Vaclav Havel, the Czech playwright from the Velvet Revolution, and he led the country, and he says that hope is not the conviction that things are going to work out, and I'm paraphrasing, but it's the knowing that life makes sense in and of itself, regardless of how things turn out. And so keeping that hope alive, even in these dark times, which for me comes with filling myself with nature time, filling myself with my meditation practice, connecting with other good people who have a positive vision and that feel grateful to be alive and that are wanting good things for human beings and other beings, you know, all animals and plants and just the planet as a whole. And so it's really important for me to keep a buffer up where I don't give all my time and attention to social media and what's happening in the White House. Although I do take some time to pay attention because I think it's important to know and to coordinate with other activists when I have the space and energy to do so. So for me, it's about spiritualizing activism. It's stopping, taking a moment to tune in with myself. What's really right in this moment, and how do I participate? What's my powerful move in this case? Where do I give my precious energy to in this moment? Because I think there's a lot of traps. There's a lot of things that pull us into kind of fight or flight, defensive thinking, and just drain us. And I often personally feel drained by the stories that are going on in the White House. And and I don't think that those in the White House have as much power as we give them. And I think a lot of people in my generation realize, you know, they don't have ultimate power over us, although there is a lot of harm that's happening to the planet right now at their hands. So I don't know how to reach them, but I do know it needs to happen, and that there's a subversive kind of underground revolution that's possible.
Okay, Matt.
Yeah,
Matthew,
I'd like to speak to that too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
I like very much what Skylar said. I'd like to invoke Naomi Klein, who I think is a real prophet of our time and an activist and a thinker about saving the earth. And she talks about that we need a full-throated debate about values today and what our shared humanity means and how this comes up against economic greed and corporate profits and, I would say, denial and cover-up. And she says that the internal work is crucial as we come together in resistance and transformation. And this is especially striking to me because Naomi Klein identifies herself as an atheist, a feminist and an atheist. And so I think that even she is seeing the importance of spirituality, because that's what the internal work is about, and about creating movements. And what
Skylar just said, you know, it's a grassroots thing. That's where the future lies. It doesn't lie with the White House and its enablers, although that has to be critiqued, and light has to be shed on that darkness. But ultimately, it does lie. That's why an order is something special, because it is about empowering our ordinary people and in kind of a subtle and quiet way to see the world in a transformed way, to see what's possible with our imaginations and our working together to envision a different way of living on the planet, a different way of relating, a different way of staying alive and moving together. So I would just like to that part too.
Okay.
The question too. It's certainly an important question.
Thank you. And Jennifer, is there anything you'd like to add to that?
It's such a tough question, and I agree with what Matthew and Skylar said, and I don't have an answer, but what struck me when you asked was, I know what doesn't work, how not to reach people who disagree, and that's what we're doing right now, or when I say we, I mean people who identify as liberal or Democrat or however you want to look at that, and that's shaming them and making them wrong and, you know, sending the message that they are not of value because they, you know, hold beliefs that we don't believe in and don't agree with in our core. And that's what's really got to change. And for me, that's the love part of our subtitle, Love and Action.
Uh-huh.
It's not that it's all love and light all the time and we can't stand for what we believe in, but there's got to be a way to do it that where we are, you know, we're embracing people who don't understand where we're coming from right now, and we're still treating them with respect, and we're treating them as the humans and the sacred beings that they are, no matter what they believe.
Hey boy, I wish religion had adopted that tenet way back when, because I think it's in a completely different, you know, space right now with what we're doing. So, Matthew, I'm going to direct this to you. The Fox Institute for Creation Spirituality. Tell us about it. What is it? How can we become a part of it if we so choose?
Well, actually, that particular organization is taking a hiatus for a few months. So they are set up to give master's and doctoral degrees in spirituality, and they work out of Boulder, California. But they're taking a hiatus for a few months. There's another organization called the Creation Spirituality Communities that offers certificates in Creation Spirituality. So you can study this lineage more deeply. And
what's the name
that,
of it
course,
again?
Is what,
what is the name of it
it's
again?
It's called Creation Spirituality Communities.
Okay.
And so both organizations are an effort to study the lineage of Creation Spirituality more deeply. And this lineage is very ancient, really. It's what pre-modern peoples and indeed indigenous peoples hold at their core, and that is that the earth is sacred and our relationship to it is sacred, and that the divine is found in nature, and that's what Creation Spirituality is about. And I've spent my lifetime trying to demonstrate how this is actually an integral part of the Jewish and Christian tradition, but it was covered over when the church got into the empire business and creating empires, and then it came up, St. Augustine in the 4th century came up with the idea of original sin, which is nowhere in the Bible, and Jews don't believe in original sin, and the Bible is theirs after all. Jesus never heard of original sin. So that's why I wrote my book, Original Blessing, which is much more akin to indigenous teaching that that nature is good and is a blessing. It's constantly blessing us. And it's our responsibility to respond in kind with both gratitude and the effort to heal where there's where there's suffering going on. And I want to add one more point to your previous question, and that is, of course, we can't underestimate the power of denial in our time. And there are great forces, including forces in media and corporate forces working out of Wall Street and so on, that are trying to
shut up the truths about what's happening with the earth, for example. I mean, a year and a half ago, I was at a conference in Florida on global climate change and the seas rising, because Florida, of course, is getting wetter and wetter.
Yeah.
And it was amazing the forces we're up against, because at that very time, it was January 2016, there were two presidential candidates from Florida, Jeb Bush, the former governor, and a current senator, who were in denial about climate change. Mm-hmm. Plus, the governor at the time had just sent a letter to all government employees in Florida saying you can't use the word climate change in any emails at all. Mm-hmm. So, in the midst of this, the scientists were there, and I was on that conference, showing us that in 10 years, a big chunk of Florida is going to be gone, in 20 years, another chunk is going to be gone, in 30 years, there's going to be another chunk that's gone. So you have this incredible force of denial going on, and it's very well funded, of course. And we are up against some very, very fierce and powerful forces. And that cannot be underestimated. It's like the Sufi mystic Hafiz said centuries ago. He said, it is a naive person who thinks we're not engaged in a fierce battle.
Yes.
We are engaged in a fierce battle. And that's why we need this warrior energy, this strength that comes from genuine spiritual practice and the passion that we have for the love of Mother Earth.
Well, it's very important that we have that passion. And Jennifer, when in the section that you wrote, you talk a lot about healing. And thank you for that, because everybody needs a healing. What ways do you feel that we can utilize either sacred meditations or even just putting out the positive vibe, the healing vibe for healing of the earth? How can we bring that, I don't know, together among, I guess, a group of us, and then push it out there to the world so that people can, you know, experience that energy?
Mm-hmm. Good question. Yeah, when I only have a minute to talk to someone about the order, my sort of elevator pitch about what this is, I say it's our vision for bringing more social justice, more action and activism into spirituality, and more spirituality into our activism. And those two things are actually very deeply and, integrally connected. And so I see our spirituality as the way that we as individuals connect with the mystery, connect with that which is greater than us, connect with whatever that mysterious universal energy is that we believe in.
Uh-huh.
And it's how we get back in touch with our soul's purpose, our inner purpose. And yes, like you said, so many different amazing and beautiful modalities that can help us get there. Meditation for me is kind of the primary, it's the go-to, and it's the one that's lasted through all my different experimenting with other modalities. And then bringing that out into the world, that's the activism side. It's bringing that same life, love, purpose, mystery energy out into the world, and connecting it with our community and connecting with all of humanity and all of life. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, it definitely answers my question, and I want to stay with you for one more, two more. Sometimes it's difficult for people to reach out and do something outside of themselves or even inside of themselves when they're in so much pain, whether it's physical, mental, emotional, spiritual. In a book, you talk about utilizing medications such as Kava Kava and Ayahuasca and Peyote and how they can bring an immediate healing. Could you talk to us a little bit more about that?
You know, I think that might have been Skylar's essay.
I'd
love for him to share it out. No, that's okay. his connection with those medicines, because I know he has a very deep one and a lot to say about it.
Okay. Sorry, Skylar. Take it.
No problem. Well, there's been plant teachers, as they're called in indigenous traditions of all kinds, that have been used as a way to cut through egotistical patterns that we fall into that keep us small and keep us disconnected from what's larger. And so historically, in virtually all pre-modern cultures, we've used medicines. We've used plant teachers, and there's a lot of people that are finding them helpful today. The things that I've found essential to using those tools for awakening is to have a guide or to have a ceremony. And that brings me to another point, which is I think that we can create ceremonies and rituals that are powerful enough in and of themselves to evoke the kinds of transformational energies that are needed to really evolve our consciousness without plant teachers. And I recognize that there's an explosion happening right now where even though they're not legal, and there's a lot of research happening at Johns Hopkins University and other institutions to see how psilocybin mushrooms and different types of plants can help with depression and all kinds of things. But for the sake of evolving our consciousness, there's so many tools that Earth herself have given us to be connected with the Earth's mind, to be connected with the Earth's heart. And my experiences in ceremony have helped me to shift my consciousness from one of a materialism where I see everything kind of as like billiard balls hitting into each other. And I've always had a mystical side, but there's been a way that I haven't quite fully believed that I was part of a larger intelligence, despite my experiences. And some of my experiences on these medicines have really helped with that.
Okay. Well, you also say, because you talk a lot about shift in consciousness, and I loved it when you started talking about hip-hop and how you said hip-hop basically originated in the inner city, and now it's a worldwide phenomenon, and it doesn't matter what language, nationality, or whatever. So if we can spread that type of energy with the spirituality or incorporate spirituality into hip-hop, wouldn't that be wonderful to get that energy out there?
Totally. Totally. And I think hip-hop is a spiritual revolution. It's connecting youth with hope and with fun and with rhythm and the rhythm of life. And, you know, that's at our core. It's, you know, getting into a trance through music, through rapping, through any means, it's healing. So I also think it's healing to cathart, to let out that which is taboo, that which has been oppressed, and hip hop is, that's exactly what it's about. And I think that's what spirituality is about at its core too, is some of the rituals that Matthew and I and Jennifer have put on have been about grieving and letting go and letting letting energy flow to places and that it's not normally considered appropriate in our culture to be and to be fully alive, to be fully human. You know, in a supermarket or whatever, you'd get looked at really funny if you start calling in the directions or saying a prayer.
I chuckle because I found out from real life experience. Yeah, people look at you real strange. And I just go do my thing because I have the right to, practice what I practice. So, Jennifer, I think this one is something that you contributed. Talk to us about how the Earth and the cosmos, because we did a lot of Earth talking today, but how does the Earth and the cosmos become our greatest teacher?
That's such a big question and a beautiful question. And for me, it's seeing everything in your life, everything on this planet and in the cosmos as a mirror. Everything is a teacher. And I use a few examples in my essay. And I really love, I'm working a lot with trees as a teacher right now. Uh-huh. And that's a perfect example of how the Earth and the cosmos give us these lessons just by being. And so, like with a tree, we see that a seed is planted. Maybe a human had the inspiration to put some shade in their yard, or an animal ate a piece of fruit and carried the seed in their belly and dropped it somewhere else in a field. And so a seed is planted, and then the first thing that happens is it starts to grow roots. And the roots grow and grow and strengthen. And then when it's ready, a stem starts to grow and finally pushes through the dirt and grows out into the sky. And that's been such a healing message and teacher for me in my life, that before we grow big, before we grow out, before we connect with this outer world, we need to root. And for me, that's, again, that inner spiritual practice, that connecting with our own sense of soul and purpose. We root into the ground where we are. We're connected with the place where we live, our bioregion. We get strong in the kind of earthy, muddy, dirty darkness of the underground. And then we grow out, and who knows how far, how tall, how high, how far our branches will spread. That's one example that's what I mean. Anywhere you look, you see something of nature, see something of the cosmos, and learn something about yourself, about being human and being alive.
Yeah, you know, I love that.
Could I jump in on that too?
Yes, you can. Go ahead.
Can I jump in on that too?
Mm-hmm.
There's a great line from a great mystic, Meister Eckhart, 14th century, who says, the seed of God is in us. The seed of a pear tree grows into a pear tree. The seed of a pine tree grows into a pine tree. And the seed of God grows into God. So if you take this same image and example of that Jen just gave, the idea that the universe itself is sacred, that divinity permeates it. And in our various traditions, there's language for this. So in the Christian tradition, the word is the cosmic Christ. Mm-hmm. In the Buddha tradition, the word is the Buddha nature. And in the Jewish tradition, the word is the image of God. And the latest Jewish scholarship is that the image of God phrase, Salem, in Hebrew, really applies to every being in the universe. So we're all images of God. We're all other Christs. We're all other Buddhas. And the similar teaching is found in Hinduism. So it's a way of realizing that as you deepen, as Jen said, if you get more into your roots, down to that seed, and Eckhart says, if you want the seed, the kernel, you must break the shell. So sometimes it takes suffering or it takes letting go in a deep way to break that shell and cut through the ego, the false self, and get down to the deeper self that you find divine there. And, of course, Jesus himself also used examples of the seed. And so I think that that's another way to understand and talk about the cosmos, is to see it as a Christ, as a Buddha, as an image of God, and then all of us are parts of that. Like Thomas Aquinas said that the greatest thing in the universe is not the human. The greatest thing in the universe is the universe itself. And today what science is telling us about the cosmos is so exciting and so mind-blowing. For example, we just learned a year and a half ago the universe is 2 trillion galaxies big. Mm-hmm. That is really, really big. Each galaxy has hundreds of billions of stars. And so our minds are being blown wide open by science. And this should feed our spirituality and our sense of awe and wonder and gratitude. And what Skylar talked about earlier, the amazing miracle that we're here on this unique planet, and that we're able to talk about it, think about it, learn about it, and hopefully act on it.
Okay. Mm-hmm. That's the operative word, act on it. Okay, so guys, we're almost at the end of our time together, so I'd like for to talk to each one of you individually and for you to give out any information you want to give out or programs or whatever is going on, kind of like your last words of wisdom for the audience today. So we'll start with Skylar, then go to Jennifer, and then finish up with Matthew. So Skylar?
Thank you. Well, we take groups out into the wilderness, and I've done that with high school students and with adults too. So you can find out about that at wildawakenings.com and also orderofthesacredearth.org. We write about what we're up to there, and we're also going to do a cosmic mass, which is what Matthew mentioned earlier, mm-hmm. that's how we met, at the Parliament of the World's Religions in Toronto in November. And we're just trying to inspire people to create pods around the world, where people can practice coming together in this sacred way to honor the intergenerational wisdom that we all have, and to ask these questions and practice showing up together in community.
Okay. Jennifer?
Yeah, thank you. So my background is in publishing, and I'll first say that I have a year-long program that's going to start fall of 2019, and it's 5 different weekends that are part healing and self-care and spiritual exploration, and part writing and publishing guidance and workshopping, and it's also kind of bridging those two, bringing your spiritual practice down into your writing and your words. And anyone can learn more about that at my website, jenniferbarrettbooks.com. Barrett is B-E-R-A-T. And then I also want to say, for the Order of the Sacred Earth, we're going to have another vow-taking ritual that'll be on the solstice again this year, and probably in Berkeley or Oakland again, and we'll have all the details for that coming out pretty soon, and they'll be available on our website, orderofthesacredearth.org.
Okay, and what is your website again?
JenniferBarrettBooks.com.
And spell Barrett again?
B-E-R-I-T.
Okay. And last but not least, Matthew?
Well, what about your radio program, Jennifer and
You're holding back on
us. There's so much going on. I was holding back. Yeah, we have a radio program through Unity FM that will be starting on November 13th. It's called Our Sacred Earth, and we're going to be interviewing a new person every week, someone who we consider a mystic warrior of our earth right now, and learning about the work that they're doing in the world. This is a follow-up to and a continuation of the conversation that we started in our book, Order of the Sacred Earth.
Okay.
Thanks, Matthew.
Great.
And Matthew.
Well, yeah, I've just come out with 2 new books. One is called Naming the Unnameable, 89 Wonderful and Useful Names for God, including the Unnameable God. So that comes out in October 9th. And then a series of dialogues I did with Lama Somo called The Lotus and the Rose, Conversation Between Tibetan Buddhism and Mystical Christianity. So Lama Somo and I did these dialogues at various places over a 5 or 7 year period. And now that book is out, but also the video comes with it for free. And they can see the dialogue between Christian mysticism and Buddhism, Tibetan Buddhism going on. And then we have an exciting event in Germany in June 16th to June 21, 2019, called Eckhart at Erfurt. In Germany, there is a priory and church where Meister Eckhart lived and worked for many years. So we're going to study Eckhart there for a week. And it's a real exciting occasion because we'll be right in his morphic resonance field, because it's a very building that he worked in. And it was never damaged in any of the wars in Germany. So it's going to be very special. And people can go to my webpage, which is matthewfox.org, to learn about that and to learn about these books and whatever else. I'd welcome people to look that up, matthewfox.org.
Okay.
Thanks for asking.
Okay, hey, you're welcome. It's part of the reason why you're here, to share information, to help people grow, you know, to help them go within and get the information.
That's why you're
go with
a program
out.
Like this. Thank you for your program, too.
Oh, well, thank you. I appreciate that. You know, guys, our time is up. I thoroughly enjoyed having you. Folks, go out and get this book, Order of the Sacred Earth, An Intergenerational Vision of Love and Action. You will absolutely positively get a lot of information from it, a lot of insight, and it allows you to think. Okay, it just doesn't program you with what to do. it allows you to think. So if you consider yourself a forward-thinking person, this book is definitely for you. If you consider yourself a closed-minded person, this book is definitely for you, because it may open your mind, expand your mind a little bit more. So to the audience, and to Matthew and Skylar and Jennifer, I really thank you for being with me today as we collectively get over it. The divine in me honors the divine in you. And when you're ready to live a more balanced life, give me a call. Intuitive consultations, 30 minutes or longer, or offered at a 10% discount if you mention the podcast. Love yourself enough to make an investment in yourself. Make that call, 888-240-6057. And remember, the most important choice that you can make is what you choose to make important. Consider making the masterful choice of love in action. Abundant blessings, light and love to all. Namaste.